Hey guys, and welcome to episode 11 of Underrated, a podcast where we look at films we believe are underrated, generally disliked, or simply forgotten. I'm your host, Gabriel Green, the incredibly handsome criminal genius and master of all villainy. And I'm here with my arch nemesis, James Hamrick, who has been gifted with the power of flight, invulnerability, and great hair. How you doing?
I'm doing well. All true.
Yeah, definitely. So, how's your week been going?
It's been all right. I am now getting back into having just crazy amounts of homework due, but it's all good.
Homework. Yeah. Yeah, my last week was pretty crazy. We had a pretty prolific music video director come into the studio, and he shot the music video while we filmed a tutorial of him making a music video. It was a really cool experience. I learned a lot, but it made my week very, very busy, and it didn't help that I had our longest podcast yet to edit.
Oh, yeah. How is that going, by the way?
It will be out by tomorrow, but or a week ago when this podcast actually airs, but I got it out faster than I thought it would.
Nice. It was fun to do.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. All right. Today we are reviewing the 2010 DreamWorks animated film Megamind. But before we get into that, have you seen any cool movies lately?
So the only movie I've seen since we last recorded was Whiplash, and I'd already seen it before, but I went and saw it with some friends, one of whom hadn't seen it yet, and I love this movie. I'm very hesitant to just, like, I only recommend it to people who I know can sit through, like, just the foulest language imaginable, like, thrown together in ways I had never heard. But it's, the performances in this movie are so excellent. And I know everybody instantly goes to J.K. Simmons because, I mean, rightfully so, he's amazing in this movie and he absolutely deserved his Oscar. But Miles Teller is equally amazing, in my opinion, in this. Just the arc he goes on from, like, you know, just kind of a very introverted freshman to, like, a kind of a jerk by the end of the movie. Like, it's it's just so well acted. And then just the direction, the camera work. I almost feel like it's directed the same way music, where you have to hit everything right on time, like the way the camera switches, especially in the actual scenes where they're performing, just the way it's going back and forth. And there are even some moments where it kind of feels like what we were talking about with Jackson, where it's like really kind of energetic camera style, because there are certain scenes where it's just the camera, like, out of nowhere kind of zooms in quickly on a character and then turns real fast. Sometimes it's very subdued, and then sometimes it's hectic. It's just an incredibly well-directed and well-acted movie.
Yeah, I would say that film's pretty much a flat-out masterpiece. It's just this perfect experience from start to finish of watching these two characters with this psychological battle. And yeah, J.K. Simmons is amazing in everything, but he's incredible here. Miles Teller's good. And then, as you're mentioning, just the editing and direction. Did it win best editing?
I think it won best editing. I may end up needing to, if I say that, I may end up correcting it on the next podcast after I look it up. But
I think it did, because I know it was nominated, but it definitely deserved it. It did.
Yeah, I hadn't seen Birdman, which is what won best picture, but
there wasn't much editing though.
I heard it's amazing, but...
Oh, you haven't seen it?
I have not seen it.
Oh, man. You need to see that.
I need to see it. Of all the movies that were nominated, though, that year, Whiplash was the one that I wanted to win. It's one of those instances where, like, we kind of talked about it, pretty much called Insomnia the same thing, where really just looking at it start to finish, it's almost just essentially a perfect movie. There's not really any... Yeah. Anything you can pick at and say, well, I mean, this right here, if I had to say something, it's just all around so tightly edited and so well acted.
Yeah, just thinking about the final performance in the last act of the film, it's essentially just a drum solo, but it has you, like, on the edge of your seat because it means so much for these two characters. And then just the subtlety of J.K. Simmons' performance, where it just... how their relationship is, like, in constant flux throughout that scene, where they start off they're friendly. Then he realizes, no, he tricked me. And he's just getting back at me. Then he comes back and starts taking over the show. And J.K. Simmons is like furious. But then he realizes that he found this great guy he's been looking for all his life. And he slowly starts to begin coaching him again. It's just such a fascinating scene.
Yeah, he found his Charlie Parker at the end of it. It's
yeah.
So that's probably one of my favorite like finales of a movie ever. It's so well done and incredibly shot.
And what's crazy about it is if you actually think about it, even though it's triumphant, it's a little depressing now. Because you realize both these characters have completely sold their souls for this thing. And now they're stuck with each other.
Yeah, I mean, a sequel would be a horrible idea, but I'd like it for the director to just come out and say, okay, well, this is what happened. This is what's canon. They went off to do this. Because, you know, it
ends. He probably committed suicide somewhere.
Probably. It's I mean, obviously, I guess we should have said beforehand, spoiler alert.
oh, yeah.
But, like, I love the ending, and I wouldn't change anything about it, but I would have liked to have known what they ended up going off to. And maybe they could have done, you know, one of those so-and-so went off to blah, blah, blah at the end. But I don't know. I also like just cutting to black and instantly going to credits.
Yeah. So. And the music's amazing too. I've never liked jazz, but the movie almost made me like it.
See, by the end of that, both times I've seen it, I instantly wanted to just go and put like a jazz playlist and just fall asleep listening to it.
All right. Have you seen any other movies?
That's it. What about you? Have you watched anything this week?
Yeah, I've been up watching through the Harry Potter series in preparation for Fantastic Beasts. And the series is actually back in IMAX for all this week. So I watched Sorcerer's Stone at home. Then I've caught Chamber of Secrets and Prisoner of Azkaban in IMAX, which was a cool experience because I actually only came into the fandom about 2 years ago. So I didn't catch any of them in theaters. That was really fun. I'm not going to talk too much about them because I want to do a mini-sode on the whole series once I've seen them all. But instead, I'm going to publicly shame James because he's never read the book series. And so
I have not, and I have been told to so many times I need to get around to it.
Yeah, you really should. I think it's a bold claim, but I would say rank them up there with Lord of the Rings and the Narnia series as just all-around great fantasy.
Maybe Narnia, because I love Narnia, but see, I wouldn't put Narnia on the same level as Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, they're three very distinct, different genres, and with very different stories. But what makes the Harry Potter series so good is that it starts off as a children's book, and each successive book is a little darker, a little more mature, a little more interesting and in depth, and the world is slowly built, and then. Speaking of just setups and payoffs, I've never seen in any book or film or story ever just setups and payoffs set up so well as they are in this story. Where just like an offhand sentence in the first book comes back as this important thing in the last book, and it's just constantly throughout everything is perfectly set up and slowly built to this insane climax. And yeah, you need to read it, dude.
Yeah, I think the only thing keeping me from it is time, because everything I've been told about it, I feel like it's a series that I would end up loving. I probably need to be shamed for my movie experience as well, because I've only seen the first two, or no, the first three, for whatever reason, skipped the fourth, and then watched the fifth one, and then none of the rest. So
yeah, I would actually advise not watching any more of the movies, just because the experience of reading the books and how well the stories are told, I mean, so much of the fun is just in experiencing it, and I wouldn't want you to see the film, because the films are mostly good, but they're nothing near like the books.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've enjoyed them. The first two are fine. Like, they're both good. And then the fifth one, is that The Order of the Phoenix?
Yes.
That one was... I wasn't a big fan of that one. I just don't like the narrative structure of it. I really liked the third one a lot, even though I had... Some of the same criticisms I had for the fifth one, I had for the third one. They're just to a much lesser extent. I think what made me like the third one so much was the very like gothic feel of everything, the darker kind of very, just the architecture and the way Alfonso Cuarón filmed it was, to me, head and shoulders above the other three I had seen.
Yeah, I just saw the third one last night, and I think it's almost a masterpiece. I think there are a couple narrative problems that keep it from being one. But, I mean, as far as fantasy films go, you couldn't ask for much better. All right, is there anything else you want to mention before we get into the main topic?
I think we're good. I'm ready to start talking about this very underrated movie, I think.
All right, let's move into our main review of Megamind. Megamind was released in 2010 and was directed by Tom McGrath on a budget of $130 million, and it grossed $321 million. So it was a modest success, and it stars Will Ferrell, Tina Fey, Brad Pitt, Jonah Hill, David Cross, and J.K. Simmons. It received okay reviews, but aside from a pretty loyal cult following that I've noticed, it seems to be almost completely forgotten, and that's a shame, and we're here to fix that.
Yeah, so I only saw this one time before watching it again for this, and I really enjoyed it. I think what overshadowed it was just Despicable Me. They both came out the same year, and looking at the amount of money it made, you know, $321 million, it's, you know, not horrible. Then you go over and you realize that Despicable Me made over $200 million more. And then, you know, it has its sequels, and I just think it came out at an unfortunate time because of what else had come out.
Yeah, it's actually a pretty similar story. Well, the story itself is very different, but the concept is pretty similar. You have the mega villains who eventually turn out to be nice guys.
And, yeah.
I won't say this is better than Despicable Me, but I think they're both amazing.
Yeah, this is always so weird to me. It's very weird trying to predict what animated movie is going to be like the next hit and what won't. Because I honestly didn't think Zootopia was going to be like the huge hit that it was. And then you see another movie come out called, like, you know, The Secret Life of Pets. It wasn't, you know, a failure, but it didn't make half of what Zootopia did. At least in terms of what I can perceive. I may be completely wrong. But it just seems odd trying to figure out which next animated movie is going to be the next Frozen or the next whatever, because I see a lot of good ones kind of get forgotten.
Yeah, because like The Good Dinosaur, which I think is almost a masterpiece, got pretty mixed reviews, and I think it actually was a failure at the box office, which might have been the first time for a Pixar film. But Disney's been on a roll recently, at least financially. I'm not sure creatively, but with Frozen, Big Hero 6, and now Zootopia, they're really raking in the money.
I haven't seen Zootopia yet, and
oh really?
I don't want to like judge Frozen based upon the hype it's gotten afterwards, because I don't think it's as good as.
Just judge it anyway. It deserves judgment.
I'll judge it based just on the standard I would judge any animated movie, and I actually liked it. I think it's a really good movie. I don't think it's. I'm fine with it. And then I love Big Hero 6.
I don't like Frozen. I think it's not terrible. I just think it's very, very mediocre. Especially when compared to like Tangled, which doesn't get enough attention.
Tangled is the better movie. And I think when you ask most people, at least for whatever reason for me, Tangled almost always ends up winning out. So I'm like, how did it not make as much money? Because I know more people who, when asked, say Tangled is the better movie.
Let it go. That's why.
Oh, that's probably why. Not enough kids didn't ask their parents to see it.
And millions and millions of five-year-old little girls. That's why. So, back to DreamWorks. Yeah, this one's been a favorite of mine since I first saw it a couple years back. And it's kind of it was kind of perennial viewing at our home. Because it is just so much fun. And I think this might be the most quotable film ever made. I got to think about that a little bit more. I'm not quite ready to say it, but if it's not the most, it's probably the second most.
I like it a lot. I wouldn't go that far, but I did end up, I was worried that I was going to watch this again after having not seen it for a while and be like, oh, well, I kind of get why it was forgotten, but I ended up still liking it a lot. And it is funnier than most animated films, I feel like. A lot of them just come and go. You can clearly see, like, well, this was thrown in because they knew they could get a bunch of six-year-olds to laugh at it. But there's, like, a lot of humor that pertains to anybody with a good sense of humor. And and for someone like me who really loves, like, the comic book superhero genre, there's lots of just really fun kind of references to things like, very clearly it's Marlon Brando as Jor-El whenever his space dad.
I'm like, your space dad.
There's just a lot of like funny things like that throughout. And it's got a great cast. I don't understand how this movie couldn't be as, or wasn't more well received just because of the star-studded cast itself.
Yeah, I'm not the biggest fan of Will Ferrell. I think he can be a good actor, but here, I mean, this, he was completely perfect in this role as Megamind. I mean, I think every line out of his mouth, even if the writing isn't necessarily funny, he makes it hilarious with his performance.
Yeah, I'm usually a fan of Will Ferrell. Like, he'll, every now and then he'll be in roles where I'm like, I mean, it was, I feel like whenever he's more restrained, I guess he's funnier. Sometimes it'll be a little bit too far or too much where it's not, it's just kind of like visual comedy. But for the most part, I really like him. And he's just as good as he's ever been in this movie. He delivers some of the lines, like you said, some lines where it's like, I mean, yeah, it's a pretty well-written line, but just his delivery is so good that it makes it funny.
Yeah. And then I think the overall cast of just characters in the movie is really good. I mean, the character of Minion, it's just, he's a fish in a ball. It's so bizarre. And then he rides around in a giant gorilla robot suit, which is the weirdest thing. But he's such a fun, just what he brings to the character of Megamind is so much fun. There's so much great banter between them. And it just, I think the character of Megamind, the story overall is a twist on the Superman mythos, where they both get sent from dying planets, but Megamind was supposed to get the glory, but no, the guy Metro Man, which is the surrogate for Superman, he came and took everything from him. And it's interesting, the film is both about destiny and choice. Where in the beginning it seems that they were both destined to live the lives as enemies, but as the film goes on, we're gonna be spoiling this movie, just so you know. So go if you haven't seen it, go watch it. But we're gonna spoil it. And as the film goes, you see that they each have to make their own choices. What makes them as they are now? It's a very interesting story, I think, even though it's buried under a lot of just funny quips and action scenes.
Yeah. Watching it, I couldn't help but think of, like, I remember thinking, especially the first time I saw it, that this movie, like, kind of like what you said, underneath all, like, the funny lines and back and forth, like, there's a good story there. I mean, I could honestly see that if you stripped away, like, the comedic element from it, it could almost make, like, a really good, like, live action entry into the superhero genre. But,
yeah.
Yeah, and then on who you mentioned, the character of Minion, he's probably my favorite character in the movie. He has, like, just the back and forth between him and Megamind is so funny, and I've been a big fan of David Cross ever since Arrested Development, and so just his voice makes me laugh because I just think of his role, but he's another actor who kind of, like, took lines that maybe wouldn't have been as funny and aren't really funny just in and of themselves, but he says them in a way that just makes it hilarious.
Yeah, I think they probably had them record together a lot of the dialogue in this film, just because the back and forth banter is incredible. And it like films like Toy Story or Monsters, Inc., where they had the people together to make sure they got that chemistry. It feels like that when watching it.
Yeah, and I didn't even know that about Toy Story and Monsters, Inc., but it completely makes sense because I feel like you can tell the difference almost. You can tell when someone just has naturally good chemistry with each other, and that can't be had if you're not playing off of each other. So their back and forth felt really natural. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if they were in the same booth.
Mm-hmm. And I like the send-up of Superman that this film is, where you have the character of Metro Man, who's just a complete diva, And it's hilarious. Just how everybody's just fawning over him. He's just this complete airhead.
He's loving every minute of it.
I love you, Metro Man. And I love you, Random Citizen.
Yeah, Brad Pitt was another. He's not in it a whole lot, but he had a lot of, for the few amount there were, he had some pretty good lines in it as well. And he owned that, like, cockiness. It was a fun character, I think.
Yeah, I don't have a lot written down, so I think this review is just going to be us going back and forth highlighting scenes and stuff. But yeah, did you have anything in particular you wanted to mention?
Most of what I have down for this movie is just kind of more very simple things. I don't have a huge list of different notes I made. I just wanted to highlight one. I want to highlight the animation. Like, a lot of what we're going to talk about, I'm sure, is just about, like, the story itself, the writing and the cast. But just so that we don't forget about it, I really like the animation of this movie. I think there are scenes that are actually kind of beautiful. For whatever reason, one of the scenes that just instantly came to mind was as Metro Man is using his super speed to, like, contemplate his life in the middle of their climactic battle. Just him kind of walking through the world in that scene was, there's a lot of really good animation going on there.
Yeah.
And another thing that I think that the animation of this movie did really well was it really allowed for some really good facial animation. Like, there's a lot of good expression on the characters, especially for Mega Man. Like, Mega Man, you can tell what he's thinking and the mood he's in just by his face. And I know more and more movies are doing that now as technology increases, but I mean, 6 years ago, this was really good. And I mean, I think it's still, if it were to come out today, I don't think anybody would think, oh, it's a bad looking movie.
No, it does look pretty good. And I think the filmmaking is, it's very, just the camera work, not really camera work, but the animation, it's so dynamic. Every shot, there's just interesting stuff happening, and there's a lot of cool zooms and swooping camera movements that are still very exciting as someone who watches a lot of superhero films. I think just the overall filmmaking and camera work is really fun.
Yeah, one of the shots that comes to mind whenever you said it was right after he essentially wins the city and Highway to Hell starts playing and the camera just pulls back as you see the line of people. Like, those are shots that you would see in actual, like, live-action superhero movies. Kind of like what you're saying, there's really good dynamic shots going on in this that are really fun to watch and just really well done. It's better than, I would say, most animated movies. A lot of animated movies, they don't really focus a lot on kind of where the camera's at. Probably, I mean, I'm sure large part because a young child couldn't care less. But just in terms of, like, as someone who appreciates that kind of detail and just good camera work, I loved a lot of specific shots in this movie.
Yeah, and I think the writing and story is a very tight script. There's a lot of animated films tend to drag toward the middle just because there's so many little subplots that don't really matter. There aren't that many subplots here. Everything, and there's a very tight cast of characters, very few side characters, and it all just flows together. You have the beginning where you set up this. In essentially just the intro, you set up this incredible rivalry between him and Metro Man, and then it turns the tables where the villain actually wins. And then the character realizes, I didn't really want to win, because all my purpose was being a master villain, and now I have no one to fight, so he has to go try and create
Titan.
Another... Yeah, Titan, another hero to fight. And while he's doing that, he's falling in love with the Lois Lane or Roxanne Ritchie character. And kind of another twist on the genre. And then the character turns evil and he has to go become the hero. It's a simple story, but it's very well told. The film's it has a great pace. It's exciting, and it just flows really well. There's nothing really boring about it.
Yeah, and something else that I'd noticed, especially the second time watching it, like, I mean, you know, it has the, and I don't even really think it's a cliche. I don't think that just because it's a something that you see repeated where, you know, the bad guy ends up being the good guy. Just because something's repeated doesn't necessarily make it cliche. But even though it has that ending that's, you know, easy to predict from the beginning where, oh, I bet he's going to become the good guy in the end, there's a lot of other things this movie does that's like the opposite of cliche. You know, the nerdy, bumbling camera guy who's always following around this girl who secretly loves her and he just can't even, like, that's always the guy that the movie tries to get you to root for. So what this movie does is he gives him that power and then he turns the character on its head where this guy, given what he wants, is actually the bad guy. And that's, like, incredibly uncliché. Like, that's something really cool, I at least that I thought about it. I thought it was kind of a different take on, it's usually just kind of that side character.
When I say cliché, what I mean is it's a very self-aware movie, and it's knowingly playing these tropes to try and twist them or just to make fun of them or whatever. Like, it's not like... A bad cliche is one that doesn't know it's being cliche and that uses it in place of actually telling a story. Just, hey, we all know what this happens, so just do this without actually building the story. I think people confuse cliches and tropes.
Mm-hmm.
I think tropes are always going to be around and we need them because they're ingrained into our psyche as part of storytelling. But what's good is when you could take the tropes and turn them on their head and do something new with them. And I think, well, I don't know that this film is, I wouldn't call it, necessarily call this film original. It's not lazy, though. It's definitely not lazy.
Yeah, it takes an idea that's kind of, like you said, not particularly original, maybe, but does something maybe a little bit different. And then I think if you were to take an idea and do it well, regardless of whether it's been done before, that's not a bad thing. With all these remakes coming out that are coming out all the time, the instant reaction that you see is like, oh, of course, Hollywood's run out of original ideas. But to me, sometimes there are stories that are just worth like retelling, especially as technology improves. And the idea of doing the same story again isn't inherently a bad thing, I think, especially if it's done well.
Yeah, case in point with these Disney remakes, I personally think the remakes are better than a lot of the original films. And even if they were just as good, I think you do get a very different style and dynamic when you're doing live action as opposed to animation, where you can spend more time with the characters and just do more adult, not really adult, but just more thoughtful explorations of the story that really can't be done in the animated films. I think if a story is worth telling, it's worth telling twice if you want to actually put the time. I mean, there's plenty of lazy remakes out there. We all know that. That just want to cash in on a name. But if a director and storyteller is willing to put the time necessary into it, like, say for example, like 3:10 to Yuma or True Grit remakes, I think the True Grit remake is a flat-out masterpiece. Just because you have these passionate filmmakers who are telling their own story in a way that was incredible, I think.
Yeah, I mean... I don't know what the general consensus is on whether, like, which one's better. I know that both of those movies were well received, but I mean, I like the remakes better in both of those cases. So yeah, like the idea that, you know, Mega Man may not have been, and it did come out a few months. I think it came out in November, and Despicable Me was in July. I mean, that's not really enough time to be able to rip off an idea. But, you know, like, it wasn't even really the only...
Actually, knowing DreamWorks, it is.
Okay, well...
Ants was actually a ripoff of Bug's Life, but it came out before Bug's Life.
Oh, okay. Well, so maybe that's exactly what this was. But
I don't know. I'm not saying that's what this was, but DreamWorks is known for that. But they did a good job with this one.
Yeah, even if that were true, if the studio itself was being lazy and not wanting to, you know, try to find something new to do, the actual crew wasn't being lazy.
Oh, definitely not.
You can see the passion in this movie. These people know the kind of tropes that, like you said, they're turning on their head. They know them, which is why they can do this successfully. And yeah, I really like the story of this movie, and I think it did a lot of new things.
Yeah, and I actually think, like, just the personal character stories, just the character growth and development works pretty well. Because you have you have the supervillain and the damsel in distress and the superhero, but they all have this really casual, friendly working relationship. It's pretty hysterical just how the character of Roxanne Ritchie, she's used to getting kidnapped, and she banters with Megamind because it's all just part of her day. And then Retro Man, he's just playing it all up for the cameras. And you can always see he's getting in front of cameras and always striking a cool pose as he says his quotes.
That's one of my favorite little like things that may be easy to miss is whenever he's talking to Megamind through the projector, he's making sure that every time he says something, he holds the mic up. Like, it's such a show. He wants everybody to hear this. Like, it's such an obvious, like, he's playing this part for the crowd. It's just a real, like, and my favorite line from that scene is, I forget what the actual line itself is, but it's when Mega Man was saying, like, you have to get here, like, she's screaming or she's panicking, waiting for you. And then it cuts over to her. She's like, not screaming here. I'm fine. Like,
yeah.
It's just such an obvious, like, she couldn't care less about this. Like you said, it's kind of another Tuesday for her.
Hey, could you stay on my frequent kidnapping card?
We already discontinued that.
And then the story where he has to create the hero. And then he's talking to Minion. It's like, I think this is a bad idea. It's like, oh, you don't know what's good for bad.
That's another really good line. I think I actually had that written down here somewhere. There's a kind of like, I remember you messaged me saying, you know, most of my notes are just quotes. And it's essentially what I wound up with. Anytime I found myself laughing, I would just write them like, that was a good line.
Yeah. So, I think if there's a character that's shortchanged, it would be the character of Hal or Titan. We don't get a lot. We don't really know why exactly he turned evil. Obviously, he didn't get the girl. And he apparently wasn't a nice guy to begin with, but we don't get much in him. I think I would have appreciated maybe a bit more character development for him and why he went and turns into the supervillain. But he's also a fun character. He's just so pathetic.
I'm kind of okay with the amount of development he got. I wouldn't want like a whole lot more development beforehand, because I wouldn't want really to be able to see hints that he's maybe not the guy we assume he is, just because, like I said, he kind of falls into that, oh, he's just a nice, bumbling guy who never gets the girl. Like, at least that was I even forgot the plot of it. Like, I had seen it, I think, when it actually came out, so that was 6 years ago. I forgot the way the story goes, so whenever he gets hit, I'm like, oh, yeah, I forgot. He actually becomes the villain, so I kind of like that we don't know a whole lot about him beforehand, we just assume, and then he gets the serum or whatever it is. And then instantly he just becomes this, like, you know, very full of himself person. And then once he realizes he can't get the girl, he's like, all right, fine, then I'm just going to use this for my own game. Like, it's not super well developed, but I think that because it's not as well developed, it kind of sells the shock a little bit better that, oh, this guy literally just stole all of this money.
Yeah. And I think actually the love story works pretty well. It's kind of at the expense of this poor character called Bernard. It's just this, we only see him for like 20 seconds of screen time, but he's hilarious. I'm not allowed to insult guests directly.
And what's crazy is that's Ben Stiller.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that was so weird seeing the credits. You'd never know. I guess he's a friend of Will Ferrell's or something.
Probably. And I know we already talked about like why we like the cast, but we kind of only hit on a couple of people. I want to talk about a few of the other people. Tina Fey was great as the lead.
Yeah.
And, you know, she kind of sells that reporter very well. And then Jonah Hill, even though he's not in it as much as some of the other characters, he's got some really funny lines, and he's essentially just playing Jonah Hill most of the time.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's kind of what he does, and he's usually pretty funny when he does it. And then another voice who I completely forgot was in it was J.K. Simmons.
Mm-hmm. And like, I mean, yeah,
the character's not in it a whole lot, but like, his lines are funny. The few that he has are really good.
Yeah. Good luck. We're going to die. Hey, what?
It was just, he's strapped and he's just couldn't care less that they're nonchalantly walking out. Oh yeah. Good luck.
Yeah. Just the side characters we do have, they actually take time to give them funny lines and make them have interesting personalities. And we want to see about the love story. I think it actually develops really well because it's understandable why Megamind would have a crush on her after kidnapping her all these times. And then when he has a chance to have a normal life because he's assumed the identity of this hapless janitor, so he won't get caught in pajamas, but yeah, he's assumed his life, and then now he's dating Roxanne as he's trying to create a new hero and train him to continue being a villain. And it's just funny. I think it does work well, to where in the end, she is kind of the focal thing that changes him into a hero. It's obviously cliche, but it works, I think.
Yeah, it's it could have felt very. This isn't a time where I think I kind of could use the word cliche. In what it could have been really cliche to me having, you know, the final battle. You know, her not liking him, and then he comes in and does like one act of bravery in the end. She's like, oh, okay, I love you now. Whereas, you know, she shows that he tells her the truth, and like we actually kind of see them having to put together this plan, and they end up spending a lot more time together prior to her deciding that she now likes him. You know, they go and they visit Metro Man, and then you do get his final like act of bravery that causes her to really like him. So it could have been. If it is cliche, it could have been way more cliche than it was.
And I think what the film does really well is as I was saying, the theme of destiny, where Metro Man is forced, because he's super powerful, he's kind of forced into this mold of the hero. And you see where he's become tired of that and wants something else. He's reading all these self-help books. And then Megamind, who was kind of... He's forced, since he looks different and he's different from everybody else, he's forced into the role of villain, where he's never actually all that bad of a guy for the entirety of the film. He was just kind of forced by society into the roles or whatever. And then, so it's completely believable when you find out that Metro Man actually is still alive. He faked his death, but he's living in his Fortress of Solitude making horrible music. That was funny.
That was a really great scene. I remember whenever I first saw this, and his the skeleton came crashing in, I was like, oh, this got really dark. And then being surprised when they actually come upon him. But that scene, to me, at first I was like, oh, of course it's a cop-out. They wouldn't have done something that dark. But then the scene ended up being funny enough where I was like, okay, no, I'm glad they did this. This is actually like a really fun direction to go with this character.
Yeah, but that's kind of funny because everyone is like completely shocked, including Megamind and Minion. They're completely like shocked that he actually won, and you almost see like a twinge of regret in the moment. It's like, oh no, we did it, and then he gets quickly depressed because running amok over the world isn't actually all that fun. And, another scene I want to highlight is just the banter between. Megamind and Metro Man when he's in the observatory, and it's just getting more and more completely abstract and absurd where they're arguing with each other. It's just hysterical.
Yeah, like I said, there's just a lot of good back and forth, good chemistry between the characters. A scene that's funnier in retrospect, like after you know the twist, whenever he gets into the dome and he's like, you fiend, you've lined this with copper. You know of my weakness. Knowing that like this was his way of like getting out of a situation. It's so like heavily acted. And the surprise on Megamind's face, he's completely buying it. Like everybody else has just kind of bought that this character is who he says he is. It's just it's a funny kind of play on, you know, Superman's weakness, but it's another just, a funny way of getting him, a funny way of him getting outside of this kind of character that you said he's kind of been forced into. But seeing it a second time makes that scene funnier, knowing his intention.
So I think we'll move into our dislikes now. Is there anything that didn't work with you with this film?
There wasn't any glaring issues that I really had with the movie. I mean, there are certain scenes. You know, you can tell just, and it's not even bad. It's just not really my humor, I guess. Like, you could tell whenever they were doing things for maybe kids who are watching it. Like, whenever they got launched and the baby's just kind of bouncing around the thing, like, I like you could tell
more slapstick.
Yeah, maybe more. There are more slapstick elements of it that's guaranteed a laugh for kids, which, like I said, isn't even necessarily like an inherently bad thing. So there are moments that are geared more towards kids that I didn't really get a laugh for me, but because it's a kid's movie, I can't even say that as a negative against the movie.
Yeah, I do think some of the slapstick works pretty well, like with the spider lands on his eye. Oh, yeah. Smacks
a lot of it does.
It's just, I think, really well-staged slapstick.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it is because of the animation, like just the look on their faces as these things happen. Like, it's the animators just do a really good job of like expressing human emotion on them as this slapstick humor plays out. But like, just in terms of dislikes, there's, I mean, it's not my favorite animated movie of all time, but that's not really because of anything it really got wrong. I think it gets way more than it, or it gets way more right than it gets wrong. And because there's not really a whole lot of glaring issues for me. I can't, even when watching it, you know, I try to think as things happen in the movie, I'm like, okay, well, I can write this down so that I can have something to say during the dislike. But that really never came around during the movie.
Yeah, for me, it's just a very minor nitpick with the character of Titan. I think Jonah Hill's good. And I think he's funny. And his character arc is interesting. But I don't think we could have used just a little bit more with that character. And that's not a huge issue. But yeah, that's about it. And then like other scenes where it starts going down a trope and I'm like, oh no, they're going to do this cliche. But then they always find an interesting and funny way to bring it back into the story. So I can't even complain about those.
Yeah, plus Titan gets what is one of my favorite lines in the movie, where he's lying to me about space, or tricking me with Space Dad. You lied to Space Mom. one of the lines that made me laugh the most.
There is no Easter Bunny, there is no Santa Claus, and there is no Queen of England. And then I think Megamind's presentation is incredible. And that's like one of the lines that have worked into my life, where I'm always quoting. Just there's so many quotes in this film that I think just work so well and just so funny, just because of the delivery that I've kind of worked into my daily life. Yeah, I really don't have any more dislikes. I think it's just very well made, a very tight script, and then these performers are just so funny.
Yeah, in terms of like which I like better between this and Despicable Me, kind of like you, I don't think I really have a favorite between the two. But one thing that I think I do prefer overall with Mega Man, I think Mega Man may have a better cast of side characters, because other than Gru and like the two young girls, and it's been a while since I've seen it, so maybe I'm really shortchanging some great characters, but other than them, like most of the laughs just come from the minions. Looking at the two movies, like I'm not sure which one would have taken off and which one wouldn't have, but I mean, I guess it could be Despicable Me just because the minions kind of appeal to kids more than something in Megamind, but I mean, I think they both deserve being remembered. They're both really funny movies.
Yeah, I think Despicable Me probably has the more heartfelt story, and also I think it does, it weirdly enough, appeal to kids a bit more. I think the humor is a bit more slapsticky. I think the humor in Megamind is a lot more based on wordplay. So I do think Megamind's a lot funnier. I think they're both equally good. I think it just depends on your mood, which one you want to watch, what you want to see. And so yeah, I think this is going to be a pretty short review, just because there's not a lot of deep to talk about. It's just, we can just keep saying it's funny over and over again, but I think we're running out of things to say. So yeah, what are your closing thoughts on this?
I think that this is a really, really good animated movie from DreamWorks that kind of got shortchanged over time. And, you know, parents are always looking for just an animated movie for their kids to watch that they feel comfortable with letting them watch. Like, if you don't have Megamind, go out and get Megamind. If your kids haven't seen it, they'd probably still end up loving it, and I still like it a lot. So yeah, I think it's a really good movie with a lot of really good and well-written lines of dialogue. It's got good characters. And it just does a lot of funny things with some tried and true tropes.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's just a very slick, funny movie. I mean, when I say it's funny, I think it's really funny. Just the lines. I've seen this movie at least 5 or 6 times, and I was still laughing out loud multiple times while watching this movie. I think every time these lines are just so fresh and funny that they always hit. What else? And I just think the what little drama is there, I think they put enough time and effort into to where the film earns it. It never feels trite or cliche. I think it earns its emotion. And I think if you want to actually think about it, there's a lot of funny and clever send-ups of the overall superhero genre that are happening, that is kind of happening in the background. I think it's a very, very clever movie. Yeah, DreamWorks is just so hit or miss that I think when they actually have a good movie from them, it's almost surprising.
Yeah, usually I just see DreamWorks as the studio that, not all the time, but mostly just kind of wishes it was Pixar, because Pixar is way more consistent. I'm not really a huge fan of the Shrek movies, and those are kind of like almost their most well-known and popular ones.
Yeah, I like Shrek 1 and 2. I like the Kung Fu Panda series. I think the first one's still the best. Although then they have the How to Train Your Dragon series, which doesn't belong at DreamWorks. It belongs at Pixar. It's so good. I consider that there's like almost masterpieces, and it's so weird coming from DreamWorks. And then this one, I think it fits pretty comfortably next to a film like Kung Fu Panda. It's just a really clever, funny movie. So we have something actually pretty special coming up next week. We actually have our very first guest. It'll be Chad Hopkins from the Cinescope podcast, which is a great little movie podcast if you want to go check that out. So we let him pick the topic, and it's going to be the 2010 adventure film Prince of Persia: Sands of Time. We're going to look at that next week, so if you haven't seen it, go watch it. I mean, to be honest and upfront, I wasn't a huge fan of it, but it'll be a fun movie to talk about.
Yeah, and I mean, to me, it's kind of exactly that. It's just a fun movie. I'm not sure what Chad's opinions on it are, but I wasn't head over heels in love with it, but it was actually a movie that I expected to walk in and fully hate, because I typically do with film adaptations of video games. But I walked away thinking, you know, I'm kind of glad that was made. That was a fun trip to the movie theater. It was enjoyable.
Jake Gyllenhaal's always worth the watch, so there's that.
Yeah, he's a phenomenal actor.
All right, so yeah, that'll be out next week. I'm really looking forward to having a guest on. Chad's a really cool guy. So yeah, thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed our review of Megamind. And if you did, I'd like to ask you to take a minute and go rate and review us on iTunes and subscribe. That really helps us move up in the rankings. And also, you can join us on Facebook. We're on Facebook as Underrated Podcast. There's fun discussions going on the Facebook page. There you can comment with what you think of the podcast, or suggestions of if you have any underrated films that you'd like us to cover. You can suggest them there. And we also have a website, underratedpodcast.com.
And then if you want to email us, we are theunderratedpodcast@gmail.com. Just shoot us any, if you want to really say anything, suggestions, comments, we'd be happy to receive any email and read them, and maybe even read them on air if you're wanting. You can specify that in the email. And then you can follow us on Twitter. We are underrated_pod. So feel free to send us a tweet if you're on Twitter, and we'll probably end up reading it during a recording. So yeah, we'd like you to get in touch with us in any way you usually do. It's fun interacting with a listener base.
Yeah, and also I am on Facebook as Gabriel Green. Feel free to shoot me a friend request.
And same for me. My name is James Hamrick, and I'd love to just keep talking about movies over Messenger if anybody wants to. So, hope you enjoyed this very much shorter episode than last week.
Definitely.
It's a fun movie to watch, and we will hope you continue to listen to us with next week's episode over Prince of Persia: Sands of Time. See you later.
See ya.
Oh, such a noble prince.
Such a gentle princess.
How taken you were with my fainting act, eagerly leaping to assist the fallen beauty.
Who said you were a beauty?
There must be a reason why you can't take your eyes off me.
I don't trust you, and you're not my type.
Oh, I'm not some desperate slave girl. I'm actually capable of voicing my own thoughts.
Yeah, too many for my taste.
Oh, yeah, she'll make a very nice addition.
What do you intend to do with her?
Yes, do tell him. Can't you see how concerned he is?
Give me a moment.
Yeah. It's hard for me to admit, but you were right. I did see what I was looking for.
Dastan, listen to me.
When my uncle sees the power of the stagger, he'll believe me.
Dastan, I know I haven't been entirely honest with you.
Oh, but your lies are so clever.
I am the guardian of a divine covenant. That dagger is sacred. It was being smuggled to safety when you stole it. If the dagger gets into the wrong hands...
I will take care of your knife.